Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we talk all things work and money with the hope we don't leave you saying, well, that was a complete waste of my fucking time.
If you recently found the podcast on iTunes, subscribe and, of course, hit us with a 5-star review.
And if you listen elsewhere, but you still have access to hashtag the tunes, you should log in, hit us with a 5-star review. Helps us stay visible. And if we're visible, we reach more people, which means we help more people.
And you can tweet along to today's episode using hashtag or pound PayBal. And you can at us directly at PayBalances. If you want to fire off an email telling us the details of your relationship, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
Yeah, basically, you can email us and tell us about whatever you like. We may not talk about it on the show unless it deals with work or money in some capacity, but feel free to entertain us. We've gotten some interesting emails over the years. I think you can attest to some of the strange ones that we've gotten.
Yeah, they have been interesting. They do run the gamut.
Yeah, yeah. So on today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about life inflation and the money minute and some things millennials are doing right, apparently. But yo, let's talk about how you just came out with the real name, man. It's a celebration. I actually have something special for you for that. I felt like that was a nice touch, you know.
Yeah, that was actually well done. That was well done. Yeah, the artist formerly known.
It's like
I thought it was like the little blurb, like with the bacon sizzling. I was like, wait, should I be talking around right now? Are we still celebrating?
It's done now, but yo, it's a celebration. It's like the coming out party.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's the time. I've got the book for those who follow us on our various social media accounts. I'm trying to roll the book out both in a, is it manual? I guess I don't even know what to call it anymore, but something that you could hold in your hands, but we'll figure it out together. We will both make it through this journey. And since the book literally has my name and not a pen name on it, I thought it's about time that I start going by the government name.
Yeah, congrats, man. I know there are some people who've been following us since our other podcast who may have heard you accidentally say it here and there. But for those that didn't, this is that new era.
The Detox album is officially out. The Detox album is officially out. Now, don't go out looking for the Dre album. I literally mean the book. For those of you who are new and don't follow that metaphor, you're probably rushing over to iTunes just to be disappointed.
Probably.
I'm talking about the book. Book was my Detox album. And I'll let y'all know you can also order the manual book. I guess that's how you refer to it.
The hard copy?
There we go. Yeah, maybe that's what
I'm like, what do you mean? Like manual? Like, what does that mean?
I didn't know what to call it. The paperback. Maybe
the manual book. That's like a double phrase. It's like a manual and it's a book at the same time. It was like the same thing.
I guess it is. I feel like that's still an accurate description. But yes, the paperback or hard copy will be available as well. I'm thinking now. See, I don't want to commit to a date because the last time I said that, it took me 3 years. But sooner than later. How about that, folks?
There we go, man. So congrats on the change, on putting the government out there, joining those of us who are fully exposed and at risk of being fired.
Hey man, there might be that time. Let's go viral on Friday, fired on Monday. I don't mean that. Please don't fire me.
Yeah, let's see what happens with that. So yeah, the money minute.
Lifestyle inflation. I was actually reading an article over on bankrate.com. I had to scroll down a little bit and they had a lifestyle section. And I had heard about lifestyle inflation before, and I'll link to this in the show notes, but I thought it was interesting how they covered it. And I'll get to that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk a little bit about, I guess, the impact it had on me. We were recently on a super secret double probation podcast. I don't know if we're allowed to promote that yet. I'll leave that to you.
No, we're not.
All right. So the super secret yet unreleased double probation podcast will be coming soon. But we were discussing some tips for cutting back on expenses, and I started crunching some numbers in real time. And I was like, I think I was even shocked on the show. I was surprised how much money you could save by making little changes. And I've done a few of these over the years, so I wanted to talk to them on the show. This is obviously going to be one of those shows where I also struggle to talk, period. So hopefully I'll bear with me.
Yeah, but for some reason, my voice is struggling too, and I don't know why.
I think I'm just sleepy, but you know, I make the sacrifice for the people. It's not about me. So I'm going to go ahead and fight my way through this show.
Indeed.
So Americans, I started looking into this in preparation for the show. Americans' top three expenses are home, transportation and food. I don't think that'll surprise anybody. But if you follow at Pay Balances, you'll see an article that I dropped over there with an infographic. I was surprised about the impact of how that money is allocated. So it's kind of it's an older article. It's from 2013, but I'm sure the numbers haven't changed that much. But the average American, according to this, was 63,000 household income before taxes, 51,000 after taxes, which in itself I thought was pretty high because I thought the 51,000 or the roughly 50,000 household was before taxes. So,
yeah, that did feel high to me when you said it.
Yeah. They said they pulled this from creditloan.com, but they said they've got it from the Census Bureau. So I don't know what exactly. There's several tables you can pull from.
Not sure. This is like stat inception.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. They got a transportation breakdown. Now this is 2013 number, 9,000 on transportation, 6,000 a year on food, 5,000 on insurance and pensions. I paused because I thought that was a little high based on some of the conversation we had on other shows that like 60% of Americans don't have any savings, pensions. And I think
insurance will cost you a grip depending on where you work. I mean, there are some places that only cover like 60% of the plan. And then if you're on Cobra,
Okay. Yeah. I thought that was high. Apparel at 1600 and entertainment at 2400, and then housing is 17,000. So as I said, top three: housing, transportation, and food. And then there's another breakdown, and I'll put both of these in the show notes of how the average American family spends their money. And then the simpledollar.com breaks down how you can save in each of these areas. So I'll link to that in the show notes. And then what I'm thinking is I'll use the simpledollar.com plus kind of my own experience to maybe tackle some of these larger areas and how you can cut back. So the one that caught me off guard when we were doing the super secret double probation podcast that we can't yet promote
So why is it double probation though? Like, what does that mean?
That's actually an Animal House reference, which is actually a pretty funny movie. You haven't seen that movie?
Nah, I'm sitting here. I'm like, double probation. I'm like, I feel like I should understand, and I'm feeling insecure that I don't.
You should check that movie out, man. It's a classic. But yes, they got in really bad trouble, and then the dean made up a super secret double probation that he was going to put them on.
All right, got it.
You should look into that movie. Actually, you could probably look into the YouTube clip, which would be a lot quicker than the movie.
Probably what I'm going to do. Anyway.
So I was looking at my cable bill. So I don't know what the average cable bill is, but mine was like $220 at one point. I don't have cable right now. I'm back on the non-cable train. Some of y'all have heard me complain about why that was, and I have a very good reason for not being there. I feel like every approximately 5 years, I get mad at the cable industry, and I just give up on them again. So I go 5 years on, 5 years off. So I'm on a five-year off period. But there was a point before that I went 5 years without cable. And at $200, that's $2,400 a year.
Yeah.
So over 5 years, just by not having cable, I saved $12,000.
That's insane.
And I thought the number was wrong. Like, I had to crunch it. Like, I ran it through calculators. I think I made an Excel spreadsheet. I think I got out like Tableau. Like, a SQL run. I was like, this can't be right. But I mean, it's just simple math. So stated another way, sorry for you cable users out there. If you had cable for 5 years, you spent $12,000 to watch Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, or whatever other show that you may be in. So I hope it was worth it. You know, I'm not judging. It's a judgment-free zone. Of course, you know how I feel about that on the show. But I was just surprised that such a simple change saved me that amount of money. So we're going to talk up a little bit about a few of these that I...
$12,000? Because I'm one of those people that I think right now our cable bill is probably $200.
I mean, you can crush the math if you want to, man. You go ahead times it times 12, times it times 5, and go ahead and get back to the people and tell me if I'm right, because I still don't believe it. It still seems a little crazy.
Man, I'm sitting here because I saw you tweet about that, and I'm like, oh, that's just whim math. And
it's like, there, if you cut back on a cup of coffee for 50 years, then you'll have $1.1 million.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thinking about it. I'm like, yo, 12 grand? I'm going to have to look at this. I believe you, brother, but I'm going to have to look at this because that makes me want to go and cut the cord. Probably won't do it, but it at least makes me want to do it.
If it makes you feel better, like in Twitter math, that's like 2 stacks. So it's really not even that impressive. But yes, it's $12,000 in actual math. Right. And it all came up from this article on Bankrate that said, the question was, is $287,000 the new $100,000? And so naturally I clicked. It is a little clickbait article. And I like Bankrate. You know, I pretty much sourced them for a lot of things. But I didn't particularly like this article because it's that old school click five pages to find out, you know, five pieces of information. So I was a little disappointed to my folks over there at Bankrate. You know, I shout y'all out a lot. I don't know what y'all doing to me here. I'm going to shout y'all out again, and I will plug y'all in the show notes, but y'all need to do something about that. At least give me the option to view all. I mean, really, this is what we're doing in 2016?
There's like a small number of sites that let you do that. Whenever I see that, I'm like, oh, this site's going on my favorite list. There's actually Pag a Nation. Button I can click to see right. all of this on one page.
2016 Pag Nation clicks. I just thought we was beyond that. That's all I'm saying.
Yo, it's like death by a thousand paper cuts, man.
But I think it's page 3 because I'm looking at my notes here and this is linked to page 3. But there's a lifestyle section in this article. And from the article is, no matter how much someone makes, anyone who lives beyond their means is going to feel financially pinched. And they call this lifestyle inflation. These are things that may not be necessities, but are considered necessities by income level, such as many middle-class citizens now see cable, smartphones, tablets, computers, multiple televisions, Blu-ray players, and gym memberships as quote-unquote essential. And what was interesting to me as I went through that list, I do consider those things essential. I'm like, who would go without those things? That doesn't even make sense to me. But then I thought about it a little bit more. I was like, wow, those things are all wants and luxuries that I don't necessarily leave. Now, mind you, I'm saying this while looking at my flat screen right now because I want to make sure I don't miss Usain Bolt running the 100 because I only got 10 seconds to do so. And because I don't have cable, I don't have a DVR to rewind things. So I literally only have a 10-second window to catch it live, which is like, yeah, it's like making me really young and like vigorant. Like I have to watch TV like 1990, like it's 1999, you know, like I can't miss. Like if I walk away and I miss something, like I just missed it. There's no rewind. There's no going back. I see a funny commercial. I can't like relive the commercial. I got to hope it comes on again. Like I'm back in time over here.
You could probably find the stuff online, like after the fact, if you really wanted to. I mean, it might take you a week before it appears online, but you could.
It's not the same.
That's nah, like it's not at all.
It's like when your girl's like, you know, wants you to leave. I mean, your hypothetical girl, yeah, in a make-believe world, wants to say, well, you know, why don't you just pause it in the middle of the Super Bowl or something? Like, it's not the same not seeing it live. 2 seconds after it happened, it's not the same.
So that made it very real for me. I completely understand at this point.
I assume that you're being hypothetical. But I'll talk about some other areas that you could save in and start crunching these numbers. And I did a little... like just some quick items that I cut back on. I talk a little bit about this in the book for those who, and I'm not going to become plug book guy every chance I get a now guy, but I do literally talk about this in the book, the full extensive list. But the one I came up with was food. I didn't really have a food budget. I just stopped eating out less. I used to eat out pretty much 3, 4, 5 days a week, going out with coworkers or whatever. And I realized, you know, a little $5 meal here, there, and that's like fast food. I mean, normally what a restaurant's going to be $10 to $15, if not more. Yeah. Like that's hundreds of dollars a week. So I estimated $100 a month. That's $1,200 in savings. I just talked about the cable at $200 a month. That's $2,400 in savings. And then I did some like one-time savings. I called up my car insurance company, and I tend to do this about every 5 years. I actually did this recently when I moved and saved $25 a month, which was a little bit surprising. I thought it was going to go up because I got a newer car, but my insurance went down.
I mean, yeah, because it's probably because of where you live.
Well, yes, I don't live in Colorado, so I assume it has something to do with the snow and weather. And I also feel like they're like, man, he's too old to really be driving fast. Like, it was like a complimentary diss.
Too old to be driving fast, though?
Yeah, man. You know, because like when you're young and 16, they're like, oh, man, you know, he's going to speed everywhere. Let's, you know, really have a high premium for him. They're like, oh, let's give this elderly gentleman the ARP discount. I'm like, like, yo, man, I don't know how I feel about the discount that I'm getting on my car insurance. But
car inspire you to drive fast, though?
Oh, I drive it. I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just all good. I was going to edit that out. Carry on, good sir.
Yes, I do test out the V8 from time to time. So $25 a month, that'd be $300 a year. A cell phone, I talked about this. I just went up there. I had an unlimited. There was another article I read that talked about you tend to get in this habit of just having like unlimited or buying BOGO or, you know, couponing, like extreme couponing. But then you just ultimately end up buying a bunch of things you don't use. And they were pointing out that that's just an equal amount of waste of money. So I had an unlimited
data
plan.
Also being a hoarder, but anyway.
Yeah, I had an unlimited data plan for like 10 years. Like I grandfathered into it and they've been trying to kick me off this data plan for years. And I've just been holding on to it. I'm like, no. And then I finally went up there and they're like, yeah, you use, I don't even remember, some minimal amount of gigabytes a month, because really all I do with my phone is play on social media all day. It's not like I'm watching videos or streaming Netflix.
Right.
And so they're like, yeah, you can get on this other plan that's $50 less. And then if you ever go over, you just pay $20. And I started crunching the numbers on that. So in an effort not to spend $20 every now and then, I was spending $600 a year.
Yeah. You know what? I think we talked about this, or we touched on this like a while back, and how insane it was by thinking how much money you end up costing yourself over time by doing the, I might need this one day, but never actually needing it. And then even if you do need it once, it still doesn't make up the difference in terms of what you paid.
So yeah, that scenario, let's say in 10 years, so basically I spend $6,000. And if I did go over my data plan, let's say I went over my data plan 100 times, like I would have only needed to pay $20. So I still lost out on $4,000. Like it was stupid. It was just a stupid thing that I was so obsessed with having unlimited data that I didn't really look at how much data I actually need or use month to month and if there was a better plan for me.
Yeah, I might need to roll my data back even more. So I went from unlimited to a capped amount of data. And there are so many days or so many months even at this point where I'm like, oh man, like I got to be close. I mean, I was streaming videos, I was tethering. And then it's like, you have used 30% of your data plan. And I'm like, yo, I'm just straight up wasting money every month. So I might need to look in the scale in that back.
What's crazy, and I think this is to your point, is it actually ironically makes me more responsible. Like now when I come home, I make sure I'm on Wi-Fi. Like if I'm out, I make sure I'm on a hotspot or I'm on their Wi-Fi. Like it's actually made me more data conscious. Like back when I had data to make it rain, I'm like, download video, let's download 10 just because, son. Like now I'm like, man, do I need to watch this right now? I think I'll wait till I get to Wi-Fi. So like the fact that my data is now unlimited has actually made me more responsible with the use of my data.
Wait, the fact that it's now, you said the fact that it's now unlimited has made you more responsible?
The fact that it's now not unlimited, if I didn't throw not in there.
Got it. Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're clear for the people.
And so, you know, those quick little simple savings, I mean, even if you don't go down, you can go talk to your cell phone provider. That was like a 30-minute conversation that saved me $50 a month. Talk to my car insurance, that was like a 30-minute conversation. Actually, I don't even think that was a conversation. I think I was able to do that entire thing online. And I'll talk about one other, but I know it's not available to everyone. So just those savings that I've covered right there, that's $4,500 a year. And then some other like typical or one-time areas you can cut back on is clothing and apparel, smartphones, electronics, just entertainment in general, just, you know, honestly going out less. And the one that I said that might not apply to everyone is a roommate. I do remember, and I didn't think much of it, but I got a roommate when I moved here to Austin the first time before I left Colorado. Mm-hmm. And that was probably saving me $300 to $500 a month. So that's $3,600 to $6,000 a year. And all those things add up. So if that was in total, that's $10,000 a year I'm not spending.
Yeah. And for people who live in cities like San Francisco, you know, the Bay Area, New York City, having a roommate is going to save them even more money than that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy to me. So because the roommate is not an option for everyone, I'll move that out. Although you might want to look at if your apartment or renting, you know, how much, same thing with the data plan. Do you really need this amount of space? And a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to go backward. I don't want to lifestyle deflate. And temporary, again, as I talked about on other shows, this, I'm not saying permanently move into a studio apartment on the west side, the opposite of the east side, for those of you who don't get the Jefferson reference. And I'm not saying that, but maybe on a temporary basis, in an effort to save $10,000 a year, maybe these are a few things that you can do. And so rolling even that roommate out over 5 years, that's $22,500 in savings.
Yeah. You know, and I'm thinking, so even with the roommate thing, there are people who would feel that getting a roommate at this point. Well, so, and let's say that this is someone who's been out on their own for a while. Getting a roommate could actually feel like a pretty significant step back. It can make them feel like they're back in college again.
And I get that, but wasting $3,000 to $6,000 a year is not a very adult, mature decision to make either, especially, and I'm thinking in these scenarios, when you're in debt. So I think it's about what are your priorities and what are your choices. So you can be temporarily embarrassed for 12 months, whatever embarrassment you may have, and you can put $6,000 back in your pocket, or you can put $6,000 in your savings account when 67% of Americans have nothing in their savings account, or you can put $6,000 towards that debt that you have, or you can continue to be embarrassed and live on your own. I mean, whatever.
Ego tax.
Yeah, it's your choice. It's cool.
Yeah, but I'm, and so it's even the same thing when you hear people talk about going back in home and like living with their mom or living with their family. So I'm sure you remember, and it's, I mean, that's still something that dudes get shamed for, or people get shamed for it. Like, oh, you went back and lived at home after school. But there are people where going back and going and living back at home for a year was the turning point for them getting out of all of their debt, for them being able to save all sorts of money that those of us who were like, yo, look at me, I'm living independently. I'm out here, you know, balling out, living on my own, paying this insane rent. And, you know, it looks great. You look independent, but then when you look at your money and everything else, you're not financially free. So it's like you're essentially paying all of this money to put on for people.
I agree. And I think that's what I'll end with this week's Money Minute is my positive affirmations I'm trying to use, or even a quote that I'm trying to use for these sections is live like no one else now, so later you can live like no one else.
There it is.
And that's from Dave Ramsey.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
And I think that's true. I mean, the question becomes, to me, when are you going to make those sacrifices?
Yeah. There was a point where I wouldn't even have considered the idea of going back and living at home. And at this point, well, I wouldn't consider that because Boobalkins and because California and because employment and everything else. But when I look back and I hear some of these stories from people, or I read some people's books, even for that matter, and I hear them talk about how they went and lived at home for a year and saved $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. I mean, I know someone who saved like $30,000 or $40,000 from living at home. And at the time it was like, oh man, like, you know, after all of this, like that's what you're doing now. But then I realized that they were significantly smarter than I was.
Yeah, I had a friend, or I guess more of an acquaintance. I think I saw this story on Facebook or something to that effect, but it's someone I'm running the same circles with. Yeah, he moved back home and basically saved up for his home's deposit. So he moved back home for like 2 or 3 years and, you know, saved $20,000, $30,000. Like, as I opened with, the top three expenses, and the biggest one is home, apartment or mortgage, transportation, and food. So if you're going to make the most significant cutbacks, those are the three areas you want to tackle.
Boom.
I mean, it's math. Like, it's the biggest expense. So if you want to have the biggest impact, you want to go for your three biggest outputs.
Yeah, I definitely got to look and see where I can find some more savings. I thought I was doing pretty well. I think I have most of the stuff under control, but cable, might be able to get rid of a few channels still. Probably going to have to negotiate that one a bit.
Well, yeah, like I said, it doesn't have to be anything major. I didn't put this one on here, but you know, we've talked and joked about with the coffee. I was like a Starbucks addict. So I was going to Starbucks spending $20, $25 a week. I mean, that's $100 a month. I was spending $1,200 on coffee. Like, yeah, that needed to change. That doesn't make any sense. And I did. Like, I got a little coffee maker. And it's not a one-for-one relationship, but I'm definitely not spending $1,200 on coffee anymore. I'm probably spending $100 a year on coffee now.
Yeah, that's
and
pretty
coffee
incredible.
Associated ingredients.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Not gonna lie, man, you got me feeling bad over here about this $4.50 coffee I bought this morning. I mean, I guess as long as I don't do that every day, I'm in pretty good shape.
Progress, not perfection, brother.
There we go. There we go. So anything else to add on this one?
That's it.
All right, cool, man. So I saw an article that came out this past week, and I guess this is the main topic of sorts. I guess I'll call it a clear segment. And so the article I saw this past week, 4 ways millennials are being smarter about money than baby boomers. So apparently we're doing something right. And I was looking at this and I'm like, why is it got to be a battle? Like, why do we have to be fighting with the baby boomers? Can't we just all just get along? Apparently not. Apparently they're mad at us. We're mad at them. And so we're going to go to war. Yeah.
Here's where I get confused. Aren't the boomers our parents? Are the boomers our grandparents? Maybe that's why I'm confused. Because if they're not our parents, then what are they?
I think it's a mix, man. Because my mom's a baby boomer. My dad was a baby boomer, too, I think.
I'm going to look this up. Because if they are mad at us, does that mean our parents don't like us? Like, is this a media-created battle? Like, I'm confused.
Oh, actually, yeah. No, so my mom was a baby boomer. My dad was not. So a person born in the years following World War II, when there was a temporary marked increase in the birth rate.
1946 to 60. Why did, what? This makes me. Right, I'm going to look to another source.
I was going to say, I'm reading from the Googs, and then I see that you were looking at the Wikipedia. Probably should have looked this up beforehand, but I didn't know you were going to ask that.
Okay. People who are between 52 and 70. Okay. So I won't go into the specifics, but both of my parents are baby boomers.
Yeah. So apparently they despise us, our parents.
That would explain a lot, actually.
But according to TD Ameritrade's Next Generation Research Survey of 1,062 millennials and 1,038 boomers, it appears we, the wretched millennials, are doing some great things when it comes to money management. So the first thing I saw here that was kind of interesting, it said 80% of millennials have a budget compared to 61% of boomers. Thought that was pretty interesting.
I assume it's all the apps. I mean, even if just to look cool, you probably have a budgeting app. Now, I've talked about, do you use it? When was the last time you logged into it? But I could see that.
Yeah. And so what you said there about the apps, that's actually the second bullet point that I grabbed from the article. So millennials are 10 times as likely to use an app, which is no big surprise. I mean, that's part of how I got organized, was by getting apps that pushed me updates on a regular basis about where I was with everything. Because the whole paper pen, I know you got the whiteboard thing, doesn't really work for me. So I don't know where I would be without some of these apps. And it sounds like that's the case for a lot of our fellow millennials out there.
I can see that.
Yeah. And then compared with boomers, the younger respondents or the millennials were more likely to be saving for a goal other than retirement. That I can definitely see.
Such as?
I mean, just vacation. Things that are more irresponsible. Car.
Okay.
You know, some big party or celebration. Maybe I was going to say maybe a house, but I don't even know if we're as pressed to buy houses as the previous generation. I'd imagine not. And I think there was another stat in the article about that. And then the next one here, compared with boomers, millennials are much less likely to set their sights on retiring at a particular age. Only 36% set that as a milestone versus 52% of boomers. Instead, they're more apt to base retirement on having saved a certain amount of money.
That one's a little surprising to me. I for some reason, I just would assume we still had an age in mind, we being millennials.
Yeah, well, then it goes on to say here, and this is the last thing that I noted from the article, millennials were also more likely to say they would retire later to make their retirement savings last longer. Now, bruh, I got to say, I am not one of those millennials. I am not trying to be, you know, filling out TPS reports at 70 or even really instructing anybody about TPS reports at 70. I'm trying to retire way in advance of that, if at all possible.
Yeah, I was ready to retire yesterday and several yesterdays before that. So this must be the younger portion of the millennials, because I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, no. I thought that was essentially the goal for everyone in this generation. I thought if just from talking to so many people, people talk about wanting to do their own thing, be free, you know, retiring at 45. And so this idea of working till 70, 75, you know what? I'm cool working longer. Like, nah, not me at all. I'm trying to finish up ASAP.
You know, now that you say that, I wonder if our vision of retirement is different. Because I can see that. Like, I think I'll always work, but I can't see myself doing a quote unquote 9 to 5 for the next 40 years. I can always see myself in something, having my hands in something, a creative space or, you know, mentoring or volunteering or teaching. But punching a clock and physically sitting in an office for another 40 years, I can't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it either, man. And I have family members who are older who are still working by choice because they want to stay busy. And I'm sure that's the case with a lot of people who are older. They don't just want to sit idly on their hands doing nothing. But the idea of having to work, and you know what? I think that's different. That's the differentiating factor. Having to work versus wanting to work and wanting to do something to stay busy and stay sharp and feel like you're giving back. I put that in a different category. So you're probably right. Our vision of what retirement looks like is probably different than previous generations, you know?
Yeah, I've talked about this before. I might need to dedicate a full show to it. I've definitely gotten some strange looks from people who I assume are baby boomers when I say, you know, I think work should be fulfilling. I don't think that's the sole purpose of work, but I am happier at work when I can align with the vision and the mission and I have a sense of purpose either through the job or I understand why I'm at the job.
Right. So
that makes me doing the job easier.
Yeah, it does.
And I've had people look at me like, what are you talking about right now? Just come here, punch clock, go home, do that 40 years. I'm like, I can't see it. That's all. That's all I'm saying for me, myself, and I.
I know. Yeah. So I don't think I'm retiring in the next 5 to 10, but I'm gonna hopefully be on that path, you know, hopefully be doing something or be in a position where I can be like, all right, you know, I can retire in 10 years or I could be in a position to, if I want to. So for me, it's all about having that choice, you know, cause that's where the freedom is the freedom is the ability to have that choice. So whether I'm still doing something and I'm 70 and I'm being productive, it's because I want to do it, not because I have to do it. So I'll take that.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So apparently there are some ways that we're staying ahead of the boomers. Of course, they'll tell you that there are a lot of other things that we're doing wrong. There's probably someone who's in the boomer generation that's writing an article like that right now.
Probably in our 5-star review area, hopefully.
I was going to say probably in our 1-star review area.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a pessimist.
So, yeah, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. So you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com if you have questions or topics that you'd like to hear covered on the show.
And speaking of email, join the Paychecks and Balances. Wow, I can't even say our own show. Let me try that again. Speaking of email, join the Paychecks and Balances email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. Nailed it. You'll receive the PMB Weekly, where we cover top stories we found, career and money management tips, and a lot more. Again, the link to sign up is paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And of course, tell a friend, send a tweet, send an email, put up a Facebook Live video that nobody watches, even though you know people saw that you were on something. Let them know that we exist. The more people we reach, the more people we help, and you are helping by default, which makes you a great person. So yeah, share the show. But anyway, thanks again for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.